Good morning. The House Education Committee will come to order. It's 8:06 a.m. and with us today we have Representative Seaton, Representative Quito the Third, and we'll call him Representative Quito when we're having a discussion, but on the record he will be known as Representative Quito the Third. Myself, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Peggy Wilson. And with that, we'll get started. Today is going to be a day that we will talk about transportation, how it's delivered, how we pay for it, and hopefully we'll answer a lot of questions in regards to charter schools. That's where the conversation first started, and we became aware that we really need to look at how we deliver transportation, how we pay for it for all of our schools. And with that, we'll ask the commissioner to come up and start the presentation. We do have with us a school district or two. We have with us pupil transportation agencies, so you know, hopefully we'll be well-rounded and we'll understand a lot more when we're done. We have Representative Ledoux who has joined us, and with that, Commissioner, if you'll put yourself on the record, we're good to go.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development, and after Wednesday's hearing, there were questions around and a request for more information around transportation. What I'd like to do is frame that conversation in the context of this bill, because it seems like that's where the question is on the appropriateness of transportation being listed as this component of the Alaska Education Opportunity Act. So I'll frame it in that regard, and surely open to any questions, but we will talk about the questions that were asked about some of the history, how it's funded, and basically the amount of money that's going to districts and the impact that it'll be on districts. So I'll see if we can address all those questions within the context of the bill. I'd like to start by reiterating the current statutory language that's in the bill, and this is current statutory language, and the whole component of this charter school piece is based on and a clarification of the current language. And that current language says that the budget for a charter school shall not be less than the amount generated by the students, and that the amount generated by students enrolled in the charter school is to be determined in the same manner as it would for students enrolled in other public schools. So the idea of this new language is not to add new components, but it is to recognize those amounts generated by students and to clarify what those amounts are, one of them being transportation. So the language here is about equity. And to address issues of disparity that we've heard about in different places around the state. With that said, you should have two documents that were submitted around the transportation issue. The first one is a paragraph pulled right out of statute. It's 1409.010, and the other is the result of the transportation formula and the fiscal impacts to districts. The transportation program was once a reimbursable program. Districts analyzed their costs, submitted that to the department. We would review those, discuss it with the districts, and reimburse those costs. But about 10 years ago, that changed. There were no incentives for districts to have efficiencies within their transportation system. It was costly to gather the data, submit the data. So for those reasons, we moved from a reimbursable amount to a block grant style. So now it's based on ADM, the average daily membership, the number of students you have in your district. There is a formula that calculates how much a district gets. And it's probably time to look at the second piece, the second document that you have. And you can look at, on the left-hand side, is the projected ADM, the number of students in the district. And this is simply the transportation cost. So the second column is the per child cost. So you're going to take that ADM and you're going to multiply it by that cost, and you're going to come out with your transportation funds. So that's the difference between the way it used to be with reimbursing actual cost to now is simply formula based on the number of students you have there. The last two columns, so you can see the third column there, estimated 2014 grant is there. So that's the total amount that a district would be receiving. Move to the last two columns, and we added that in, and those are the districts that have charter schools. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 charter school, 8 districts with charter schools, and you'll see the number of students in those charter schools, and taking that multiplier, the amount that those students in those charter schools generate based on the transportation amount. I'm just pausing to see if there's any clarification around that component, because we had a lot of questions last time just about how much money was being generated. So I'll go ahead and move on.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess this isn't directly related to what you just said, but indirectly. Explain to me what, with charter schools, there's somewhere in statute an amount of 150 students. If they don't have 150 students and they drop below that, something happens. Can you explain that part to me?
Through the chair, you're right. That doesn't have anything to do with transportation.
Yeah.
But it was recognized that there'd be efficiencies at 150. So when a charter school comes in at 150, if they drop below that, they have what we call a hold harmless, much like we do have a hold harmless for a public school that drops below 10. So we have a hold harmless. So we don't suddenly say you're not a school anymore. But at this time, current language says that you would get 95% of your funding if you drop below 150 for that year.
Okay, follow up with that,
please.
I'm sorry, because I noticed there's Juneau here has 110 and Nome has 45, and so they just can still have their school.
Oh, yes.
But they just can't. They don't get the full funding.
Through the chair, the funding changes slightly to 95%. Yes.
And so is that just for every year that they have that, or does it change? Just so for every year.
Correct.
And that's just follow up on that same
Please.
Question.
Yep.
So they will know then if they're under 150 that they're going to get less money from the state or less. Is that less money from the state?
Yes, through the chair, the students in that school would generate less funding from the state. It still goes to the district, but it would be calculated as a lesser amount.
From the state.
From the state, correct.
Actually gives them a lesser amount.
Correct.
Okay. I want to talk about that. We don't have to talk about that now.
If I could suggest, I think that conversation will probably come up in further conversations that we have along this bill, because you're not the only one who has asked that
right.
question. And if I could beg your indulgence, I do believe we'll be talking about it later.
Okay.
Representative Ledoux.
This is getting a little bit off track, but transportation as a whole, number one, is that mandated by the state that a school district transport its students?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I think it more revolves around the intent and the responsibility we have to provide an education for all students in the state. And I think transportation, I couldn't speak to exactly where it is in statute. But I think it is recognized both federally and in the state that if we're going to provide education for all students in the state, we need to provide access to those schools for all of our students in the state. And transportation is a part of that.
Follow up.
And if you will, we'll get that answer from legal and get back to the committee about that. But Representative Ledoux, go ahead.
So the various school districts, how far do you have to be from the school in order to get transportation?
It's up to the different districts to determine exactly what that looks like on the distances. The language in statute speaks to school district provides student transportation services for the transportation of students who reside a distance from established schools is eligible to receive funding. So what is that distance? I do know that there are other factors, not just distance. For instance, you have a school that sits next to a highway. You might have a student over here that lives a quarter mile away that would walk, and you may have a student that lives two blocks away that would catch a bus because it's dangerous to cross a highway. So those decisions are made at the local level. But it does recognize that some students may walk if they're within, you know, a reasonable proximity to a school.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Following up on that point, when it was a reimbursable grant, didn't the state only allow or pay for reimbursements for students that were, I think it was a mile and a half away from schools, so that you would, so that if a district wanted to provide bus service from a area that was considered walkable, then that was not reimbursed from the state?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, there were criteria. I don't think it was a mile and a half. I think it might have been a half mile, but there were also those other extenuating circumstances, including hazards. So, but there were criteria as to what was reimbursed.
And follow up.
Representative Seaton, I'm sorry.
Thank you. And so we don't have those criteria now because that's left up to the district to determine their busing system based on their providing transportation to the public school students.
Through the chair, that's correct. That's correct. We base it on what their contracts were, and that when we first switched over, we said, okay, what are your contracts now? We've been working on this reimbursable system. Let's make sure that this new system reflects those actual costs, and we build on that. So it was trying to create a new system that was more efficient to implement, but recognize their actual costs.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
And I just want to be clear, that's the second call, or the second numbers column in the projection page. That, so we're not paying a certain amount per student across the state. We're paying a per student amount that related to the cost of transportation that was in place in 2005, and so therefore we look at Alaska Gateway and it's $2,195 per student, and we look at Annette Island and it's $192 per student. So this idea that every student is generating a certain amount of money isn't the case at all. It depends on per student in the district that was based on the transportation costs at the time the bill was rewritten.
To the chair, it was originally based on routes that districts ran, but then it was calculated into, okay, now how many kids are on those routes, and that's where you come up with these numbers. So you see some like Pribilof doesn't have any transportation funds because they don't have that need. But then you see places that have great distances. You look at the number of students there and try to allow what districts were currently paying in their contracts. Now, that has been adjusted. I'd have to remember. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before where the legislature adjusted those costs.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
I have to sort of wonder out loud if you're actually talking about school transportation if a child lives no more than a little bit over a half mile, whether, except in situations where they're traversing a very dangerous area, whether in light of, we're always talking about childhood obesity, whether it actually makes sense to bus somebody for less than a mile. I mean, maybe I'm dating myself, but I remember, you know, when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth, that kids actually walked to school.
And there are superintendents in the room that I'm sure are taking notes as how to adjust their routes. And if I could just go back briefly, when we talked, and Dr. McCauley spoke very eloquently about this last time, when we talk about transportation funds recognized in this bill in regards to charter schools, what it says is these students are generating funds for the district. The district needs to have that conversation when they make their contract with their charter schools. They need to have that conversation with their charter school, and they can work it out like Becky Huggins, Mrs. Huggins spoke to or Dr. McCauley spoke to where, hey, we'll provide the transportation for you. They don't have to give money on top of that. They are providing that service in the same manner that they're providing it for other students in the district. Or if they said, look, you know, we're going to give you some money to address your own transportation needs. You don't just get to spend it on anything you want. They're transportation funds. So if you want, if that's the most efficient way, and we want to come up with a contract for the charter school to determine that, they can do that. But to say that the students generate the funds and a district to say you're on your own, we're not going to give you those funds, but you are on your own as far as transportation goes, that's the only thing that this addresses. And I was glad to see, I was interested, and I appreciate Representative Ledoux's staffer looking up the districts that do and don't provide transportation. And the information that he came up with was there are only two districts that don't provide transportation. It's Anchorage and Lower Kuskokwim. And Lower Kuskokwim, they only have one charter school that has a dormitory. So so that's not an issue there. So,
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I talked with my superintendent in Ketchikan, and they provide the transportation, and if they just gave that money to the school, they wouldn't have anywhere close to enough money to run a bus even. And so it's better for them just to provide that transportation. However, that was an agreement with the charter school, is that the buses ran earlier for the, and so if I remember, or maybe later, I can't remember which it was, but anyway, so the charter school changed the time when they started to match when the buses could pick up those kids. And so there, it's a little give and take, but it's well worth it for them. And I think overall, maybe some of the schools need to be cooperating a little bit more with the charter schools.
Thank you. And through the chair, this clarification won't impact Ketchikan because they're already doing it. They're doing exactly what this is trying to do, is make sure that if a student generates transportation funds, that it's being addressed in the contract between the charter and the district.
Representative Ledoux.
And I think it's noteworthy with respect to Anchorage. I mean, some of the creativity used in transportation, for example, homeless children are who end up couch surfing and would be in a different school district week to week to week. The Anchorage School District, I believe, and this is just from newspaper articles that I've read, takes those kids in taxis.
To the chair, different funding and a different reason, but you're exactly correct. I mean, while I was there, we had students that arrived in cabs, special contracts for students who were deemed homeless.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm trying to look at reducing conflicts between charter schools and the districts. And I think that this increases the conflict because if I'm a charter school and I can say, well, all of the kids are going to have to provide their own transportation, their mothers are going to bring their kids, and I get, by statute, I'm allocated the transportation money that my kids generate, that means my school is entitled to the transportation funds that are supporting the district busing system based on the number of kids that I have. So we're setting up this dichotomy where they do have a right to get those funds on a per-student basis if they say, we don't want the district to provide the transportation services. Mm-hmm. And so that conflict, I mean, I just can't see why we would want to put this conflict into the charter school versus districts where the charter schools have the option of saying, no, we're going to require all the parents to provide their own transportation, and or they're walking, or depends on what the requirements are, and therefore we in statute are saying, hey, you get more funding, you get the district's funding, and now, by the way, the district doesn't have the money to provide the existing busing system because we're putting this in statute and telling them they have the right to get the money. I can't see why that's not going to create potential conflicts going forward.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the if they choose to receive the transportation funds, they are for transportation. So if they're saying all of our parents are going to drive, they've got money that they can't just suddenly say we're not going to address transportation issues. But I would honestly believe that the state's not going to step in. This is not talking about the state stepping into a contract between the required contract between a charter and the district. And at that point, the district and the charter are going to determine, you know, do you need transportation funds? Can we provide them? If your parents are going to drive, do you need them? If you don't, it needs to be addressed in the contract. And I think the other side of that coin, you mentioned that you think it'll create conflict. I think if that's an issue now, there's a disparity issue that is a conflict. It's a built-in conflict. This is trying to bring equity to it. And if some people see that as a conflict, it's because they're clinging to disparity. But I understand your point, but I believe that I don't think this is going to be a leverage point for a charter school to say, well, we're going to take this money, but we're not going to provide transportation.
And your follow-up with that?
Representative Seaton.
So you are auditing each school district, and this money that is allocated goes there, and it doesn't go into their pool. It's not allocated for transportation. Is there something that the state audits and makes sure that this amount of money is actually being spent on transportation?
Through the chair, no. We don't audit to that extent. And we believe that a district, if they find efficiencies and they receive a set amount of money and they find efficiencies, are they able to transfer a little bit of money out to some other place? Yes. If they have greater costs, they'll probably have to transfer funds in. But when we look at the conversation between a charter and a district saying, okay, we've got some transportation funds. We've got $600,000 that your charters have generated. How are we going to provide those transportation services? Between you as a charter and me as a district, how are we going to do it? Because we've got this much money for that. Do you want me to help? Do you want to find a partnership? Do you want to create hubs? How are we going to do that?
And Madam Chair.
And let's get to some others, and I'll come back. Representative Ledoux.
Wouldn't a simpler way around this, which would also provide equity, would simply be that the bill say that the district needs to provide transportation to the charter schools as well as the neighborhood schools? Because, you know, as we've talked, if you've got a neighborhood school where nobody is actually being bused, that school doesn't get additional funds.
Right.
So why not? I mean, it appears that the only problem, at least based upon Mr. Brown's memorandum, it appears like the only problem may be Anchorage. So why don't we clarify in the statute that all school districts must provide transportation to charter school students as equitably and fairly as they do transportation to neighborhood school students?
Through the chair, this is simply, we don't want to step in and tell a district how to implement the most efficient process. What we want to do is clarify language that already says you need to be fair to charters. And don't forget, you need to consider the pupil transportation funds that are generated. Beyond that, we don't want to step in on how to implement. We want to say, recognize that in the contract you have with your charters.
Representative Quito.
Trying to get clarification, I think, on the same thing, and I think we end up talking about Anchorage. You know, has only one charter school, so it's very clear and easy to identify what should be the allocable cost for the charter school. But for a charter school, say, in Anchorage, where you have multiple facilities with students coming from all over the district, I can imagine that the district would have a challenge. But what I'm curious about, I think, is if you've got parents that are trying to make sure that their kids are being adequately transported to the school, we don't have, it sounds like, anything in statute that says that the district has to be able to tell them how much their school is eligible for transportation. We've lumped everything together in Anchorage. So if I'm a parent at the Aquarian Charter School and my child is going to school there and I'm concerned about transportation, there doesn't seem to be a way that I can go to the school district and say, what is the fair allocable share, and this, without the school district having to do some research on it. So I think that might be the question, and I don't know if there's a real answer to that. It sounds like there might be a disconnect because we have very limited reach into the school district, and we're allowing or authorizing or requesting that they do all of that work.
And that's a good point. Were you looking for a response, or
was I think it was that kind of clarification.
Yes, I
agree. I'm trying to understand the issue.
That
wasn't really a question. I was just trying to understand the issue.
And if I can make a comment, and I can appreciate your analogy on the Anchorage School District per se, but not that I like to brag about my school district, but we are a much bigger school district, and we still have figured out a way to do it. Granted, you know, there are stops and where they do transfer sites and so on and so forth, but I think having a charter school have an opportunity to say, hey, I have some funds that my kids have generated. You need to sit, and we need to sit at the table and discuss how those funds are dispersed. Right now, I think that without this parity or without this equity, if you will, language in the bill, it doesn't allow the charter schools to have a seat at the table, to actually have a little meat to discuss at the table. How can we do this? I don't think charter schools, I think that they recognize that they don't have that economy of scale that the neighborhood schools have. So they have to work with the school districts, but I think it allows them to have a seat at the table and have some say, and that's just my opinion. Representative Wilson, did you have?
Well, yes. Looking at the amounts, some of these areas don't have enough to even get a bus. However, they might have enough to pay a taxi every day or something like that. And so if they could use, you know, or I don't know if you can even do this. I'm just thinking out loud. Pay one of the parents that is an at-home parent to be able to make the stops at two or three places and do it. I mean, I don't even know if you can do that, but it could, you know, so that they could figure it out and work it out with the small amount of money that they might be generating to make it work. Sounds good to me.
Representative Ledoux, did you have a question?
Well, I guess I was just going to say that we're interfering as much with how the school district does things by saying that, okay, this charter school generates a certain amount of money which is going to come from the money that you have, as we would simply saying that you have to transport charter school students. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it seems like we're talking about only one district, because everybody else appears to be working with the charter schools. But I know in Anchorage that you know, if you want your kid to go to a charter school and that charter school is on the south side and you live on the east side, you've got to be able to transport your kid. Well, if somehow or other you could just say that it's the responsibility of the school district to transport charter school students, just as it's the responsibility to transport public school students, then they and the charter schools and the parents, they all figure things out without designating that it's a certain amount of money that goes to the charter schools versus the neighborhood schools.
We have the privilege today to have the MATSU superintendent in our audience. And she's been in our school district for many years until we've gotten up to this bragging situation where we can brag about us transporting our charter school kids. So I'm going to ask her to, on the fly, come up here and just speak to that process. And it's not anything that I know where she's at, and so I apologize on the fly, but because she is a school district, and what we're trying to talk about is the funding about, and the mechanics of how we would do that. And so hopefully she's been through this process and kind of walk us through it. Sorry for that, but we're in the audience. And if you'll introduce yourself for the record, and I'm sure you've been hearing the conversation, I think that our struggle is how do we, with such limited funds, make these decisions and not get down into the weeds on a local level and tell you what to do, but at the same time give equity or parity to the charter schools and their funding of transportation. So,
thank you. My name is Dina Paramo. I'm the superintendent of the Matsubara School District. And really, I'd like to support what the commissioner said. It really is a conversation amongst those folks that work in administration and the charter school principals to provide transportation. I'd also like you to note, though, it's not just a charter school issue. We're provided funds for all students. And some students go to neighborhood schools, some students go to charter schools, and some students go to special mission schools. Chugach Optional, for instance, in Anchorage, is a special mission school that probably pulls students from all around the city of Anchorage, and they may or may not provide transportation to those students as well. And so what we've done in our district is take a look. We basically quantify the amount in regard to how much is generated, if you will, for students, and we work with the principals to find out how they want to go about it. There's one charter school that their location of their school really narrows the scope of the neighborhoods around it, and so they have full transportation, and they use their funds for that. Other charter schools, such as was already discussed with Dr. McCulley, have hubs because their students are vast. And I know we're not bigger in students, but we have 25,000 square miles, and so our longest bus ride is 90 minutes. So we could not possibly go to every square inch of those 25 miles to transport kids. So we've just set up efficiencies, and even students who and their parents who choose a neighborhood school for which they do not live in that zone, because our district is flat, a choice school could even be an elementary school across town, but not necessarily a special mission school. We provide them the opportunity that they can get in a hub and then get to that school, so they don't have to drive all the way across town. So if there's someone in Wasilla who wants to go to a school in Palmer, that's fine. The closest bus stop they can get to and drop their kids off and take them. So it's really, for us, it's not charter schools, neighborhood schools. It's really every single school. What are the efficiencies? The traditional neighborhood schools do have traditional busing that has stops that we have set up. We have a high school that has two feeder middle schools. So we have Colony High School is fed by Thielen Middle School and Colony Middle School. And when the high school bus swings around, when kids are supposed to go to Thielen Middle, when the Colony High School bus, because it's located adjacent to Colony High, if they want to get on that Colony High bus because they want to go to Colony Middle, they're certainly allowed to. It's just a matter of choice. What middle school do you want to go to? If the bus is near, then you can choose to get on it. So it's really just looking at what can we do for kids and these parents to offer them the most choice. But it's certainly not every neighborhood, every school. That's unless you want to increase the transportation funding. I mean, we can work that out too, but I doubt that is something that you're looking for with the state of affairs with our budgeting and revenue. So, but it's exactly how the commissioner stated. It's about a conversation that needs to happen.
Representative Seaton.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. If a charter school wants to form and they are allocated through statute the per student transportation amount, and they want to arrange their own transportation, the conversation, of course, you know, every school needs as much money as they can get. There is no requirement in statute, and it's not put on you, that transportation money has to be used for transportation. If you get efficiencies and are able to reduce your transportation fees, you can use that somewhere else, or if it goes up, you might have to take that money and you might have to supplement the money out of your other budgetary items. How are you going to be able to tell that charter school that their statutory right to the transportation money can't come to that school, and that you're going to keep it?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, I don't believe that you can transfer. There's three different funds in a school district, an operational fund, a transportation fund, and a food service fund. And those, if there were was to be leftover money in transportation, that doesn't happen in Mat-Su because we put over $1 million of operational funds to cover transportation. You know, it doesn't cover all of our expenses. You can carry over money in your transportation fund, but it must be used for transportation. And I might be my naivety on the business side, but I believe the state only pays for to school and return from school. So this isn't even funds that you can use for field trips and things. That's not part of this funding through transportation. The transportation that's provided from the state, I've always believed, and maybe it's changed, that it is to just for home to school. And so basically, if I have transportation money, I can reserve it and create a reserve in transportation in a special fund, but it doesn't transfer over to the operational fund, to my knowledge.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we'll follow up with the commissioner, because that wasn't the way it was structured when we passed the law, because it was to create efficiencies, and if districts could find efficiencies, they were able to keep and use those funds. So we can go back.
Right, and we do have a school CFO online, too, to ask, and I know that they budget and figure out that whole aspect, too, so we'll have that opportunity. That's kind of what we were missing in our last discussion, is actually the school district and the CFO and the folks that are actually running the transportation. So, I mean, I appreciate you being in the audience to kind of tell us how at least the Mat-Su does it. Are there any other questions? Representative Ledoux?
Well, this isn't actually a question. Is I would really like to hear from folks in Anchorage to see how they would do this or what they could do. I don't know whether there's anybody online or to testify, but I'd like to invite the superintendent from Anchorage to Mr. Graff.
And I don't have anybody from Anchorage. I do have Kenai online, but nobody from Anchorage. Maybe my staff could be so kind to see if we can scrounge them up before the meeting gets over. But with that being said, and as our conversation was, so, Superintendent, do you have any ideas that don't put you on the spot? I mean, clearly the Mat-Su's doing it, but how do we incentivize other schools to work with their efficiencies to also pick up students and drop them off along the way and kind of do what the Mat-Su's doing? What Representative Ledoux indicated is, how do the charter schools in Anchorage, for instance, get to the table with a little bit of meat and say, hey, we'd like to be part of this conversation? How does that incentivization happen if we don't give them some money to sit at the table with?
Peer pressure. I don't know. And really, when you talk about transportation, we do have a charter school that did not want the transportation. And really, what the charter school principals go back to their APCs who help govern them to say, what kind of transportation do we want with these funds? So it's really a conversation with the district, but also those principals are really hired to run the charter schools, and it's their APC boards that would also weigh in on the type of transportation they'd like. I'm sure this is just bringing, sometimes when you shine a light on a problem, it gets solved, so. That might be another way.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, maybe this is just my background as a lawyer, but I'd say that if the law required the school district to provide transportation to charter school students, and a school district was not providing transportation to charter school students, that the law itself would give you a place at the table, because there are repercussions from violating laws.
Well said. Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, and I guess the question comes back to, like you say, you have students from all over. I mean, if we look at some of these areas have huge expense per student, $2,800 per year. I mean, so if all of a sudden we would put in there that you have to provide students now as a charter school, and you got to fly them across a river because they want to go to the charter school over there instead of the local school, all of a sudden we could have a interesting problem if we weren't providing more funds. So I think that the difference in the schools and the availability and what that could require, I think we need to think hard about that.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's why we have to leave it worded the way it is, because if we didn't do that and they had to provide it to every charter school, what would happen is, in some instances, because parents would want to go clear off to Timbuktu, you know, to do it, that what would happen would be that we would be spending more than the fair share getting the charter schools transportation, and it wouldn't be fair to some of the other schools. And so I think that when you use the money that's generated, then it forces them now, it would force them to just collaborate and work together until something can be figured out. But if we say it just has to be done to every charter school, well, then if this charter school is clear over here and there's a river in between and they have to, you know, whatever. I just think it's more fair and equitable if we do it the way that it's worded.
Thank you. Thank you, Superintendent Ramo. And we'll bring the commissioner back and work on him a little bit more, because hopefully you can explain some of these extreme cases, but I think it's important to look at the extremes to see how the unintended consequences could be. And I know that as we're speaking, more and more charter schools are coming online, so I suspect that they have some comments, too, as we move through this.
Right. Madam Chair, if I could clarify a statement that I might have erroneously spoke to earlier, and it was the requirement of states, and you brought the, you know, if the law states that a district or a state has to provide transportation, I'll simply go back to the statute that I read, and I probably misquoted afterwards. It says, I'm looking at the first page that I gave you, that first sentence, a school district that provides student transportation services for the transportation of students who reside a distance from an established school. That states a school district that provides. It doesn't say that all school districts shall provide. By the same token, if Anchorage or Mat-Su suddenly said we're not going to provide transportation anymore, you would have an issue probably in the court saying, how do we get our kids to school? So even though it's not stated there, I think that there would be some legal issues that would pop up about, I can't get my kids to school anymore, I don't have access to the public schools. So I do want to clarify that this doesn't speak to the requirement to do so, but I think if we didn't, we would probably find clarity in the courts on just what our responsibilities are. We do have a few. There are a lot of what-ifs. And again, this is simply a matter of trying to treat charters the way we treat other schools. Bristol Bay School District flies students across the Naknek River every day. It's probably a four-minute flight from South Naknek to Naknek. And if they don't have a charter, but you know, if they were to have a charter, it would surely seem to make sense that that charter would start at the same time as their other schools. And when I went and picked up the schools for their public school, their traditional school, not public, they're all public, the traditional school, then it would also pick up school. I mean, it's hard to look at from the state perspective of the what-ifs when really districts, I mean, you heard Dr. Paramo speaking to, this is how we've done it. And because they're right there at the ground level on how to solve these problems. And this change in statute in regards to pupil transportation funds will have no effect on Mat-Su. We're already having those conversations. So this doesn't have an impact, but for districts that don't, it will have an impact, and it will need to generate that conversation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do we have any other questions? And were you done with your presentation? I mean, I know we stop you all the way through. I do have charter schools that keep wanting to discuss their transportation, but I really am trying to get, per the request, the folks that are actually in charge of the transportation. I realize the receivers have a viewpoint, But I think, you know, the school district and how and why they have come up with why they've done it, I think that's an important part of the conversation Representative Ledoux had requested. So for those online, we're going to wait for that part, and then we'll certainly have the discussion from the actual charter schools and their conversation. So thanks, guys, for waiting. Commissioner.
The only thing I will bring up, and you can choose to do this a little later, is there were a couple questions around special needs and doing a prorata, and there was some a question around the bonding ability for charter schools. And I can, if you'd like to stick with transportation for now, I can touch on those.
I think we want to stick with transportation because there's a part in transportation, if you will, and maybe hopefully you can speak to it. And that would be in regards to the busing contracts. I mean, it's a little bit bigger than the charter conversation, but I have been asked, where are we? How's that going to change things? And quite frankly, there are also folks that have spoken about we don't just there are some districts that don't just pick up charter school kids, but they also pick up private religious school kids. So how does that fit into the whole picture of transportation? So let's talk about the buses that are stopping and picking up and dropping off private religious school kids in some districts or a district, because that kind of falls in line with picking up charter school kids. So is there money, and I know the answer, but I would ask for you to put it on record, those kids, those private religious school kids specifically, you know, I'm speaking of Monroe Catholic, is there money behind in transportation that the school district has with them, and why is that? So as we have this big conversation about can we or can we not, should we or should we not, charter schools, the conversation should come up about private religious schools.
Right. Thank you, Chair Gaddis. You may not have it in front of you, but statute 1409.020 speaks to the transportation for non-public school students, so something that is already it's relatively short. I'll just go ahead and read that short part. In those places in the state where the department or a school district provides transportation for children attending public schools, the department also shall provide transportation for children who, in compliance with the provisions of AS 1430, attend non-public schools that are administered in compliance with state law, where the children, in order to reach the non-public schools, must travel distances comparable to and over the routes the same as the distances and routes over which the children attending public schools are transported. So it does speak to the ability to the responsibility to, you know, allow that if they're, I think if I was just to put that in layman's terms, if you've got a student that's on the same route that you're driving anyway, and you can stop by and drop them off at a non-public school, it's surely allowed.
Representative Ledoux.
Has there ever been a court case on that? How does that just, you know, we've been talking about the Blaine Amendment since session started. I'm just sort of curious as to how that fits in with that discussion.
Through the chair, I won't go into the legal details because I would be unclear on those, but I do believe that when I look back at the history of this language, it speaks to the Blaine Amendment speaks to direct or speaks to benefiting a private or religious entity. This, you're picking up a child and you're dropping a child off, and I think there'd be a legal clarity around, I'm benefiting this child on a route that we're already doing, I'm benefiting a child, I'm dropping them off there. There is no benefit directly to that school. Now, it's a legal discussion, but and I won't go farther than that, but I would anticipate, and when I look at history, that's, we're benefiting a child.
Thank you.
And what a perfect segue, and I think that this is exactly, I think that what the a portion in the governor's bill says is, if it's best for kids, then that's what we should focus on. And I, for those that don't know, I'm a very pro-charter school person, and I think if you look at it, it's not about the charter school or neighborhood school, but it's really about if it's best for kids. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I think that we had the Kenai Peninsula School District. Could we get them to testify, too, so we get a different
Certainly.
Perspective on busing?
And thank you. We have the Dave Jones. Are you with us?
Hi, my name is Dave Jones. I'm assistant superintendent for the school district in Kenai. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Thank you.
Okay. I've been listening to the conversation, so I think what I'll try and do is tell you how we do it on the Kenai, and then maybe make a couple of comments on to try and clarify some of the issues. But basically on the Kenai, what we do with charter school students is we treat them, they are our students, and so we treat them as we do other students. And we transport, we offer the transport for those children within the same regulations that we have for all of our children. We have four, currently this year, we have four operating charter schools. Three of those schools have chosen to use our transportation system, and one does not. I think what it's important for people to understand when we start talking about a cost per student or a funding per student is the history, and I know I've heard the history talked about a couple of times here, but prior to 2005, we were on a reimbursable program that we were reimbursed for actual routes, and if you were going to ask to add a route, you had to go to the department and say we're adding it because we have these many kids that are currently not being served, and you know, we have a need, and they'd authorize it or not. Under that reimbursable program, the state had regulations, transportation regulations and laws that they used to oversee that. Part of those regulations, there was a regulation that we did not have to transport students that were under a mile and a half unless there was a hazardous condition that would warrant those students being transported. And at that point in time, what we would do is we would submit a application to the state for hazardous route busing. What happened then in 2005 is this reimbursable program, or the changed to a block grant program, but it's important for people to understand that the framework that existed under the reimbursable program then shifted to the block grant. So as a district, if you were running 20 routes under the reimbursable program and you shifted to the block grant program, the funding that you received per student was simply a calculation that said, this is the cost that you're currently doing. You have however many public, you know, however many students you have in your district that are in the brick and mortar buildings, that figure was used then to divide how much they were paying for that existing program, and then moving forward, we're going to give you that much per child in your district. So it's important for people to understand that when you start talking about so many dollars per child, it was that dollar per child figure that was arrived at came from the calculation of how many routes you had divided by the number of children you had. And so we've kind of, the amount of busing that's been carried forward was basically determined off that 2005 framework, and it's been moved forward now. So I guess I'd stand for questions.
You see, do we have any questions? Representative Ledoux.
Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
So the way it works, if a school district had been not attempting to be at all budgeting, conscious of costs, for example, and then you compare that to a school district, because, you know, it's going to be reimbursed, to a school district which said, well, it's going to be reimbursed, we can spend, you know, up to the moon. So the school district that tried to be responsible is actually penalized under this system, huh?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
At the transition time, if that was existing, then you would say, yeah, there was a penalty for that. the check and balance on that was that to get routes authorized at the state, you had to prove that they were financially necessary and that there was a, you know, so many untransported children.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remember at that time that there were schools that were very frustrated with the way it came off because they were just being really frugal, and so there were districts that were upset by that. But we had to come up with something, and that, I guess that's what we did. But at the time, there were some happy campers and some not-so-happy campers.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I'm trying to figure out that if we incorporate into statute that the charter school, their funding includes that generated per student on transportation, and you have a charter school that does not require transportation, but they are allowed in statute the money to them that is generated for transportation. How does that affect, I presume that's going to subtract that amount from your existing routes. How does that affect your providing of transportation within the system that's created in the district?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, what would happen for us is if we had a charter school that said, we no longer want transportation services from you. We want the dollar amount. It would be hard for us to do that because our basic current contract with First Student is based on the dollar amount, the $965 dollar amount that we get generated. If charter school said, okay, we no longer want to have transportation, we wouldn't be able to cut routes or do those things because the transporting of their children is existent in the route structure that we have. We wouldn't be able to redo that and achieve fewer bus routes. So what would happen is we'd have to write them a check for however many students they had at times 965, and then when it came time to pay per student, we then would be short that amount of money and probably have to transfer it from the general fund to pay for a student.
Representative Seaton, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, I mean, if I'm a charter school and I'm either not currently getting transportation or if I decided that I wanted to reimburse parents partly for their gas, bring students to school, and then use the other transportation money, if it needed to be used for transportation money for field trips and those kind of things, the way the statute's set up, proposed, do you see that you would have much options in denying that, or would you just have to deny the charter school based on the destruction of some routes? You'd have to deny a new charter school the application because it would be subtracting from the amount of money and the number of routes that you could take within your current transportation budget.
Okay, I think I heard two questions there, and maybe I didn't, but I think I heard existing charter school and new charter school. My earlier conversation that I talked about the dollar would be if we had one of our existing charter schools withdraw then and ask for the dollars per student from their students, that would cause a deficit for us. If we have a new charter school, what we do and tell them is that we're able to provide transportation to your location as long as it meets the minimum safety standards we have as far as turnaround spots and those things for busing, and then we would just fit that school within our existing route system.
Yes, Dave, this is Representative Gaddis. I have a question for you. You said that there were, you have four charter schools, three chose transportation, one did not. Do you know why the one that did not chose not to have transportation to their charter school with you?
I'm sorry, I do not know that. It was, I've been in the district 6 years, and they've been in existence about 10 years. And I know that I had a brief conversation with the principal, and he just said that it was a decision that their APC had made, that because they felt that their students would be coming from all over the district, and it wouldn't be fair to ask the district to transport those children. That's about a two-minute conversation I've had, so I want to be careful about testifying to that.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner, would you like to, do you have anything to add to this conversation?
I do. And I think we have to go back, and I know I've reiterated it, but the amount generated by students enrolled in the charter school is to be determined in the same manner as it would be for a student enrolled in another public school. So when I pick an Anchorage, there's going to be some schools that receive, they don't need it, they're all walkers. And there's going to be some that are all transportation. Anchorage School District isn't going to go to that walker school and say, we're going to give you a bus whether you want it or not. And they're not going to go to a charter school and say, you have to take a bus. We're going to, and like was just testified, this one charter school said, we don't need transportation, we're okay, we're happy with what we've got. There's not this money, and we want money. The conversation is around in the same manner that it is in all the public, all the other public schools and the traditional schools. We're providing transportation based on the amount generated from all of our students, and we're recognizing that need. If you don't need it here, we don't need to provide it there. Well, I'm not going to pay the neighborhood school money because you don't need a bus. In the same manner is the idea of equity. And so I understand your concern, but there's not money on the table to leverage to say, if you don't need transportation, then you get money. Because if I offer transportation and we work out a contract for transportation and we get what you need, and that might mean one bus and it might mean no buses, then we've worked that out. And your students have what you need to get to school okay. We've addressed that, and there's not suddenly an additional amount of money that you have to pay because you've met the you've discussed the transportation need. Those students generated those funds for transportation in the district. And so I just want to clarify that if there was money on the table only for charters, but not for a school that didn't need a bus, now we have disparity again. Now we've gone backwards again. Now we're treating charters like super schools. Now they get something that nobody else gets. That's not what this is about. It's designed and it's written to bring them up to the level of the other schools.
And I'm going to pitch in. I have a feeling that Representative Seaton and I are on the same side here. So I'm certainly more confused than when I started for what that's worth. But I guess my question would be, and I want to try to look at a worst-case scenario. So if the charter school wants transportation, the school district doesn't want to work with me, what do I have? I heard you indicate that I don't have any money, and so it's not like that check is going to be written to me that I can do something else with or even hire my own buses, unless I didn't hear you correctly. So could you say that again to me so I can figure out what the leverage is if I don't have the money?
So one situation is the charter says we don't need transportation, like was just testified. There's no obligation to force transportation on them.
Well, and Commissioner, if I could interrupt, I'm not sure that was what we heard. We heard that he had had a two-minute conversation. Sure. He wasn't sure why.
So let's say a charter school says, I don't need transportation. You've had that conversation.
Sure.
You're covered. Your kids are covered in whatever way you've chosen necessary. Now, the other side of that is a charter school says, yeah, we could use transportation. We're having a hard time getting our kids here. We could get more kids here if we had transportation. Now, the district says the district has an obligation to look at the funds generated by those students and say, okay, how can we help you get it? That's the leverage. You said we need transportation. Our students have generated funds for transportation to the school district. Help us figure out how to transport our kids.
And so the question is, and by law, you have to sit down with me and try to help that out and give parity to my charter school.
Yeah, I would
so
argue.
That's the leverage. Is that what you're saying by law?
I would argue that it's already there. It's just general and open to interpretation when it says, the budget shall not be less than the amount generated by students. I think it's already there. This simply brings clarity that it does include these other funds, these funds that are generated by students.
I understand. Representative Seaton.
And, Madam Chair, it's not about the conversation. It's about the words on the paper. And the words on the paper is the charter school on line 4, the budget shall not be less than the amount generated by the students enrolled in the charter school. So that means that the budget to the charter school is different than a neighborhood school that doesn't need transportation. They don't get money directed to them in a budget. They don't get the money directed. This, by statute, says that the money that's generated for them per pupil will go to the charter school in their budget.
In the same manner?
No. It says...
It's clarified on line 7.
It says that an indirect cost rate approved by the school district, the Department of Education, the amount generated by students enrolled in the charter school is to be determined in the same manner as it would be for other students. Well, that's fine, but what you're saying is it's got to go into their budget.
Right.
That's
current statutory language.
Yeah, current statutory language says that you have to give the charter school the money, and now we're adding the transportation portion into that has not been in there before. So that's going to have to be transferred to however that is. It can be a contract in which the school district wants to say, we'll provide transportation, and it'll be the per student money. But if they say they are going to have the parents provide it, and I don't see that the district has any option other than to do exactly what it says. The budget shall not be, and the budget is transferred to the charter school, and the budget shall not be less than the amount generated on the per student, including transportation. So I guess I just need something from Ledge Legal to tell us what this contract means that says it'll be transferred here alone. So thank you, Matt.
I guess I understand the question, and we'll get that back to the committee as well. I'm sorry.
On the bill.
Where
seven.
Are we at? Page 7?
Page 7, line 4, Madam Chair.
Correct. Representative Wilson.
That's all right.
Representative Ledoux.
Okay, I'm thinking along the same way. I mean, what you say, Commissioner, if that's the way it's going to happen, that sounds reasonable. But what you say and what I'm reading on this page, maybe I'm reading something wrong. This isn't my area of legal expertise, but it doesn't look like that's the way it would turn out. I mean, to me, it looks like if a charter school just happens to be in a neighborhood somewhere and nobody needs transportation, and the charter school says, everybody's living within, 6 blocks of us, that they would still actually get a specific amount of money for transportation costs. So,
and I would simply, through the chair, I would simply say that when I look at in the same manner as it would be for a student enrolled in another public school, then I would have to say that if that's the way it works for a charter school, then that's the way it works for public for the neighborhood school. And if they only have one bus and another school has two, then they should be getting funds for not having two. And that's not the way it's done. It's not the same manner. So I think if that's the way it's interpreted, Ledge Legal will be a good one to weigh in.
And we'll.
But if that's the way that it's interpreted by Ledge Legal, I think it's going to open up the door for every other school in the district to say it's going to change the same manner.
That's right.
No, I was just going to say, rather than sitting here and us arguing about what it means, let's just get the legal opinions.
Good idea.
And that's what we'll do. Representative Keto.
I have a question maybe just for clarification. It's still kind of on the same point, but I think Are the funds for transportation administered separately from the funds for the BSA?
Through the chair, yes. They're formula, and they're generated by formula by ADM, but they are separate from the BSA formula.
So are you saying that the way this reads, you would administer the BSA funds in this, a manner similar, and then you would administer the transportation funds in a manner similar, but you don't consider them as one fund for a single budget?
Through the chair, for accounting purposes, that's correct. Yes, they're still generated by the student, by ADM, but they are separate accounts. Okay.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clear up because there was some discrepancies on what people interpreted. So the school district, at least Matsu, thought that transportation, the money they got for transportation had to be segregated into a separate account and couldn't be used for anything else. And that's different than I remember the discussions and the proposals when this came forward and was changed in 2005. Can you tell me the legal aspect of, are the monies just generated based on their past transportation systems, and whatever those transportation dollars are, if they could save money, they were able to use it for other purposes, and is that still the case?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'll need to get Elizabeth Nudelman to explain. I may have misspoke, and I think Dr. Paramo's firsthand perspective of how her budget works is surely valid, so I'll need to get Elizabeth to clarify.
And we do have a CFO for a school district online, and just because Matsuda's my school district, they're the only one that's online. So let's ask Luke Fulp online how he does it, because he does that. That's his job, if you don't mind.
That's fine, Madam Chair. And
we'll follow up with
that. And it's not only how a district does it, but how state law requires
absolutely
them to do it is my question.
So, Luke, are you with us?
Yes, Representative Gaddis, I'm here.
And as you've heard the conversation going around, and I think I'll the question is, can we take transportation dollars, and if we have acquired certain efficiencies, can we roll it into other areas used for education? Did I get close? Thank you. And, Luke, if you'll put yourself on the record.
Yes, this is Luke Fulp, Assistant Superintendent of Business and Operations at Matsu Borough School District. To answer the question, I think that it is a bit complicated, and potentially Elizabeth Nudelman can shed more light on the issue, but from my perspective, the Pupil Transportation Fund is discretionary in nature, and so being that it changed from that reimbursement basis, it was administered much like a special revenue grant in the past. This fund, now the fund sources that we receive from the state are discretionary, so potentially they could be used for other purposes. But in terms of a transfer back to the general fund, while it may be allowable in state statute, it's nothing that we've done here in the Matsu, and as Dr. Paramo mentioned, we do run a deficit in this fund, so we're not even in a position to transfer money from this fund back to the general fund. It's more of the other way around. We're subsidizing this fund with instructional dollars.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's what I was trying to get to, is that a charter school is not under that obligation to only spend those funds that they would be entitled to in transportation. I mean, they don't have to account for that separately, I don't believe, and we'll find out from legislative. But the way I read this, they would not have to account for those funds separately. They would be, their contract would have to give them the money that was generated there if they requested it that way. And that's a concern that I think could bring conflict in the future. Thanks.
And we'll go to Ledge Legal and get that, and it's good questions. Do we have any other questions for the commissioner about the transportation component with the charter schools before we go and ask for an update while we're here in regards to the busing contracts and where we're going with transportation? That really doesn't have to do with the charter school. And if you're not prepared for that, what? You're not prepared for it. Okay. Any other questions in regards to the charter school component of transportation? Thank you, Commissioner. And we do have some charter schools online, and I promised them that we would get to them. We have Fireweed Academy in Homer, Kiki Abramson.
Good morning.
And if you'll put yourself on the record, I'm hoping that you can address from your perspective some of the questions or some of the many questions that we had around transportation and charter schools.
Okay. For the record, my name is Kiki Abrahamson. I'm the principal of Fireweed Academy. I've been with the school since its inception in 1997. And I, from our perspective, I believe that the most cost-effective way to handle transportation monies is for those monies to go to the district. As a small charter school, even if we got the per pupil amount allocated to our budget, we could not afford to put up the contract and take care of that business. The school district does that on a much higher, economy of scale. And so I think it's a more efficient way to use taxpayer dollars. And that's what we have is a great system. It's been working just like Mr. Jones had already explained. We're treated like other students in the district. If the kids are in and out of attendance area boundary, and if there is room on the bus, then they may ride the bus. If it's not, then the parents have to provide transportation. And I am open for any other specific questions.
It doesn't look like we have questions from the committee at this time, and thank you for waiting. And we'll go to another charter school. We have Joey Eske from Anchorage, and she's chair. Oh, I'll let her put herself on the record. Joey, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
And if you'll introduce yourself for the record.
Okay, for the record, my name is Joey Eske. I am the chair of Aquarian Charter School's Academic Policy Committee in Anchorage.
And Joey, have you been listening to some of the questions and statements here, and can you enlighten us from your perspective?
I have, and I listened to your Wednesday testimony as well. I think around transportation, the most common criticism we get as a charter school is that we are inaccessible to economically disadvantaged children because their parents can't get them there. So as a charter school, I don't think the nature of our ask for transportation is such that we want yellow buses to come to our school every day. I think that the nature of our ask is that we would like the ability to sit down with the school district and say, we have children that can't get here who could really benefit from our program. Can you please help us get those children to our school?
Thank you.
I don't think a charter school would even want a pot of transportation dollars. I think they, in Anchorage at least, I think we just want the ability to negotiate and come to the table with the district, which we have not had in the past.
And I guess our question here was, how does this part in the bill allow you to have a seat at the table that you didn't think you might not have had in the past?
Well, we've never had a transportation discussion with the Anchorage School District, as far as I've been involved, until 2 weeks ago, when we met with the district and they brought forward this transportation. And how they explained it to us, and I'm pretty familiar with their transportation budget. They do currently run at over $1 million deficit, so they are using general funds already to supplement their system. And when they came to the table with us, they said, well, we could provide transportation with you and share this money with you, but we would have to get more money from the state before we can do that. And then they said, and I asked, how would that look for us to come to you? And they said, well, if we did receive more money from the state and we could allocate funds to the charter schools, then what you would have to do is come back to us and buy our services with the money that you've been allocated. So it was an interesting conversation around what they're willing to provide for us and what they're not. And charter schools, I think more than anything, just want it to be fair to the kids that attend and want to open the doors to more kids. that aren't able to attend because of lack of transportation. I don't think we want to just take this money and just use it for anything.
Right. Thank you, Joey. Thank you for waiting online. If you'll stand by for some questions.
Sure.
We have been trying to get the Anchorage School District. I think that they are in meetings at this time, and so we've started at the top, and we're moving down the rung. So we'll see. We've got another half an hour. So we certainly would like to give them equal opportunity. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess one question I'd ask you, are there buses now that are going right by homes that they could stop and pick up, or are those buses full? So would indeed the school system have to add another bus online? That's my question, because I don't think it would cost them any more if they've got a couple, two or three seats available. But if that bus is indeed full, then I can see the dilemma.
Sure. You know, I can't answer that question from anything except observation. And, you know, there are buses that go past my school or my neighborhood all the time. And there are actually buses that go past our charter school because they pick up the neighborhood kids around the charter school. But they do not stop at the charter school.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's definitely a bus flow around the whole city.
Right. And I can see where they might, if the buses are full, they would need to double back on a route or some such thing. So,
sure. And you know, looking at the history of how the per student allocation was determined in 2005, at that time Anchorage was not providing transportation for charter schools, so they would not at this time, you know, have the monies to probably provide transportation to charter schools. And additionally, Anchorage does not provide transportation for our alternative and optional schools. So I think when you open this up for charter schools, you actually have to open it up probably for all types of schools that are public schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it does provide a big dilemma for ASD in terms of they would have to really reevaluate how they're running their buses. I do know that at the current time they do service one of the alternative schools, which is the Rogers Park Highly Gifted School, and they bus kids in from all over the city to Rogers Park for Highly Gifted program.
Thank you, Joey. This is Representative Gaddis. Do you know, does the Anchorage School District provide transportation to any charter school or just not yours, or are you aware?
They do not provide transportation to any charter school.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
No, thanks.
Any other questions for Aquarian Charter School? Thank you for waiting online, Joey, and thanks for listening to us last time. And it's an interesting conversation. We won't be done with this charter school aspect, it sounds, for a little bit. We do have Greg Reynolds from Sitka online. Greg? We might have had Greg online. Greg, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. If you'll introduce yourself for the record.
To tell you the truth, I'm here to follow the Section 17 TVIP funding, so I don't want to take up your time commenting on something I know nothing about.
I appreciate that.
We had problems at the local LIO office, and we had to go hustle off and find a phone to call in on, so we haven't been able to keep up on a lot of the schedules.
Sure, and today we did not intend to talk about the TVEP, but I appreciate you listening in. We do have a couple folks in the audience that would like to speak, and we have Brendan Gertz. And I just want to say thank you, Brendan, for coming all the way from Anchorage. And we're not as scary as we look. We're really not. But we appreciate you stepping forward. It's kind of scary to be. I've been on the other end, and it is scary. So if you're not afraid, I appreciate it. If you'll introduce who you are and where you're from for the record, we'd love to hear from you.
My name is Brendan Gertz, and I am a student in the Anchorage School District. I have come down for the past, my second day here of a three-day trip where we're trying to raise awareness for Anchorage's needs and for the needs of the entire state. I represent an organization known as Students with a Voice that is not affiliated with any school district or any school. It's affiliated with the Students of Alaska, and it has hundreds of members, and we had a rally at the LUSAC with the Anchorage Caucus was going on. I wanted to speak not only on, as I've been listening to the transportation issue, I wanted to give a little perspective on that, but at the same time I wanted to speak a little bit on the governor's bill for education, just as this is the Education Committee. On the transportation, I was actually a part of the Rogers Park program, which is the only program that Anchorage will bus from all over the city. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that that program was the way the buses are going. If they didn't decide to do that, they would save a lot of money. So it's not something that they are doing and it's being done perfectly efficient. They're doing it because they believe it is important to get these students. Like on my bus, it was a full-size bus and we had 6 people that rode that bus back home. And that was because it had to drive from our school all the way up into the military base, and it had to go around for the military kids. And that's because they have to do that to make the program equal and not just have one neighborhood be able to benefit from it. And if there's any questions on that.
I have a question. So if you were king of the forest, what would you have done differently? Just since you're the guy sitting in the seat, and so you kind of could see it from the inside out, and certainly you may not have all of the answers, but what would you have done from a student perspective differently to become more efficient?
To become more efficient, I don't know what I would have done, because if you look at the geography of the Anchorage city, it's very hard to get large quantities of, it's a little harder to get large quantities of students in for the highly gifted program in itself, to get them in different areas, because it's such a diverse program. We have people that will come from the far south side, and I'm from the north side, and we'll just kind of intermingle in the at Rogers Park. But I don't know if there's really much else you could do better. Now, I do say that if we would have gotten a smaller size transportation, that would have been a better thing, and I do believe they're trying to get a smaller one, but there's just not enough of the smaller buses to get it. I believe that would have been better, and if you do have to use the larger ones, I would have expanded the route a little bit to making it a little bit longer and saving a little bit of money.
Thanks. There's a job out there for you. No, seriously. Do we have any questions before we let this young man carry on? Please continue.
The second issue I wanted to speak on was the governor's bill, which has me extremely concerned for the public school system. On the BSA funding, which is the main point I wanted to talk to, a lot of the governor's bill I do agree with, but some of it I don't, especially the BSA and the vouchers, but I want to talk on the BSA. I do like his plan to raise the BSA. I just do not think it is enough money that he wants to raise it by. I don't think the $86 this year, I believe, is the number. I don't think that's enough at all. I think what would happen is it would raise and it would do a little bit of good, but it really would not help to bring back what we've lost over the years, and it would not stop the impending, I think, 200 positions being lost in Anchorage alone, which if you add in all the other school districts around Alaska, they're having to lose teachers and counselors, and we've already lost counselors for the past few years. I think we need to get a little bit more, because taking away these people is not only hurting the education, but it's hurting the emotional stability of every single student there. Because I can tell you, as a military child, it's terrible to lose people that you've pretty much grown up with for the past few years. Especially the elementary school kids have a really hard time letting go. High school kids, not as much, but some kids have a very distinct connection to a counselor or even just a teacher they have. Like, I would be completely destroyed if I were to lose one of my teachers, because they all understand, like, what different challenges their students have and are able to convey that to the building and help and make the efficiency of the building much better. think any loss of staff in any school is a terrible, terrible.
So I'll ask you this again. So if you're king of the forest, how much money is enough?
I am looking for, and obviously this is just my opinion, and there are some other numbers out there, but I think somewhere, if we were to go and fully bring back everything that we want to be brought back as an organization, we would need somewhere upwards of 400 this year. And we also would like it to be inflation-proof, this money, once it does get there, so that the money that is there will not rot away.
Mm-hmm. Very eloquent, and I really appreciate your testimony. Thank you so much. And next, we have Gretchen Stoddard.
Hi. Yes. My son goes to Golden View Middle School. I'm from South Anchorage. I'm here with the support of Golden View PTSA, but I'm probably going to move off from my, my approved topic a little bit because my son takes the bus. And, I'm on Seawind Drive. Okay. And I work for a private company. I'm taking vacation time today. I was at work, and I thought, no way, I can't go down there, I can't get involved. Well, I think you're going to actually see more of me, and of other people like me, or if not, well, then you guys will probably get your run of what you want to do. But what my son does take the bus, it's not full. But when it runs late, I get really mad, and Facebook pages blow up. And because the bus that my son's on, it goes to South, then it goes to Golden View, then it does another elementary school right after that, Rabbit Creek. Now, maybe there is a way to change it, but I actually do honestly believe that if one driver can do all three of those, then it could well be more cost effective. And I know, when things are running perfectly, there's space on there. But as soon as it snows, and sometimes it does, and the hillside, it has icy roads. And people like me get really upset when my son is sitting out there for 45 minutes at the bus stop. And so when things run perfectly, there's space on the bus. But when, sometimes it doesn't, and I don't like it. And it's wonderful. If we have the resources to send everybody to the school of their choice, great, and provide a bus there, wonderful. I will say there's another Hillside mom and I. We came down here, one from Rabbit Creek, one from Golden View, and we thought about, should we take a cab to the airport or should we park there? And it was cheaper to use airport parking because a round trip cab ride was going to be $75. Anchorage is a big, massive district. Anywhere I grew up, there would have been 15 suburbs with different school districts and one city school district. And I would have been, and when you crossed a town line, then the property values would have changed because of the quality of the school district. The way Alaska's set up, we don't do that now. So you are going to have me in here more in the future. If we have money to move everybody in Anchorage to the school of their choice, absolutely wonderful. But my son, he can walk to Rabbit Creek Elementary, he can walk to South High, and he takes 2 years of busing the way it's set up right now. He's at Golden View now, he plans to go to South, and I did drive him across town to a language school for a while. Sorry, I'll stop.
Thank you. And I hope you don't mind us asking some questions. We really appreciate you coming down from Anchorage and testifying here. So,
and I will try to remember to say through the chair.
Oh, no,
I promise I'll probably forget.
Don't worry.
I'm concerned.
Exactly. And we appreciate that more than trying to remember going through the chair. So it's all good. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can see that you're excited about this and that you really have a passion. I'm not from Anchorage, so when you say, when you mention a school, I have no idea. So do you? So he's close to, he can walk to the high school and he can walk to what?
An elementary school.
Okay, and so, but somewhere in there, he has to get bused to a different school.
Seventh and eighth grade. He'll be on the bus.
Okay, and so, right, Is he walking now, or is he's riding now?
He's busing now, and okay. So there are a number of years in his education where you saved money. You didn't pay for his bus ride.
I understand. Okay, that clarifies it. Sorry. For me. Thank you. No, that's job. Okay. I just don't know Anchorage at all, so thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
You know, I understand that this could conceivably be fairly difficult for the Anchorage School District, but I guess I've got to wonder, if the Anchorage School District has made accommodations for Rogers Park, which is an optional school for gifted kids, and sees the need to bus people from all over town, sometimes small numbers of people in large buses. I guess I wonder, well, how do you justify that it's okay and you have the money to bus one group of students from all over town, but not bus other students who are going to other schools, like language immersion programs, which are, you know, in today's age, it's wonderful to know, and it's not just wonderful, but it's actually becoming more and more necessary to know a second language. Why should those students be treated differently than the Rogers Park students and the general student population in general?
So clearly this is a mom, because any, you know, speaking individually for myself, because this is, you know, to me, involved parents are getting put at each other's throat to divide us and get us fighting with each other. And that's, I mean, that's what is going to happen. And I hope it's not an intentional division of people to get us fighting with each other. I personally think that we should be focusing on sending them, you know, giving every group one option with full bus service, and any other options, if a parent chooses to send them there, they have to get them there themselves. This is my personal view. I don't think we have enough resources to give everybody the choice of a bus in Anchorage from one corner of Anchorage to another. And you're right, if you're going to give it to one group, I think you have to give it, you know, I can see the argument for having to give it all to them. I do want to say I'm also a taxpayer in the Mat-Su borough, and friends and I go up to area, and I'm not going to pretend I'm anything other than what I am. We go to areas where there are nice, we, you know, on a lake, and I've been in the schools in some areas. I value the schools in my area, and we discussed that there are areas of this state I would not move to because I value my son's education. And I, you know, I'm sorry about that, but the state has the resources, I believe, to give one good option to children, but we don't have the resources to give full bus service to everything that every parent would want. That's my personal opinion. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Keto.
Yes, just a quick question. You had mentioned something about weather and room on the bus. Are there issues when there is a weather delay on the bus, or was that?
There's always room on my son's bus, but what happens is this one bus driver in this one bus, they do three routes in a row. So if it starts running, and it's a time constraint, and so if it starts running late on the high school run, which is the first one in the morning, then by the third route, which is driving the elementary school kids, they're standing outside for an hour. So it's the time involved that they can't make extra stops to this school and that school. There are empty buses. It's the time schedule, I believe.
Got it.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming forth and speaking as a mom.
Planned testimony, but I want to say this is not Republican or Democrat. It's
no, it's not. Sure. Thank you. And with that, we'll go to OffNet. We have Bob Griffin. Bob, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you loud and clear. And if you'll put yourself on the record and who you may be with.
Sure. I'm Bob Griffin. I'm a newly elected member of the Rokashula Academic Policy Committee for the Rokashula German Immersion School in Anchorage. But I'm actually representing myself and also my role as the chairman of the Budget Advisory Commission
for
the Anchorage School District today.
And yes. Bob, you said you were on the APC board of the German Rokashula German Immersion School. Is that a charter school?
It is. It is a charter school, as a matter of fact.
Okay, just checking.
And I just wanted to follow up a couple of remarks of some of the folks that I've heard today. I think that not all of the charter school parents that I've talked to over the years would probably completely agree with the assessment that Ms. Eske talked about how charter schools funding and transportation should work. I think many people are thinking that we should take a little bit more outside the box approach to the charter school funding and the charter school transportation issues. I agree with the CFO of the MATSU that we would probably approach these more as the discretionary funds and apply them in some way that would allow better access for low-income kids to charter schools by finding some sort of alternative transportation methods that may not be associated with yellow buses, that may have to do with, you know, contract van services or, reimbursing people for gas money, for volunteering to provide van services, that type of thing. That's one of the things that is actually kind of unique about the charter school programs in Alaska compared to the rapid expansion of charter schools in the lower 48. There's that most of the charter school programs in the lower 48 are geared towards helping out low-income people. And with the exception, the really good exception of the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School in Anchorage, the majority of charter schools that I'm familiar with tend to be upper middle income kids of fairly significant means. And just for a sideline, so I don't know if they still provide transportation, but the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School has provided transportation in the past, and I'm not sure if they're still doing it in their current facility. But mostly I wanted to point out that the committee members should maybe think a little bit outside the box on this, that providing the transportation funding and somewhat equalizing the financial support for charter schools would give the charter schools the ability to figure out creative ways to provide transportation and allow lower-income kids to attend these campuses.
Thank you, Bob, for your testimony. We've been trying through this committee meeting to get the Anchorage School District. They've been in meetings all morning, and we're fortunate that they have called in. So we have about 9 more minutes to talk with them. So I appreciate you calling in. We'll go to Mr. Mike Abbott with the Anchorage School District. Mike,
good morning, Madam Chairman.
Thank you so much. And I'm not sure if you have been brought up to date on our conversation, or shall we ask you questions and then you can answer? How would you like to do this?
I've heard about the last 10 or 15 minutes of the committee hearing, ma'am. Whatever works better for you is fine with me. If you want to focus me on the specific issues that you're interested in, that might be the best way to use the few minutes we have.
And I think we will do it that way. And secondly, thank you for coming out of meetings. I know that you have all been in meetings this morning and with no notice, and I really do appreciate you coming online. I think that the crux of the question was this. You're a large school district. You have a lot of not only area but kids. And when we look at the governor's, what we're calling the governor's bill or House Bill 278 at this time, and we're talking about the transportation section for charter schools, we're hoping that you can not only speak to that but answer a couple of the committee members' questions. So would you like to speak to that portion first on how you see that affecting your school district, and maybe we can ask some questions as follow-up?
Yes, ma'am. The district hasn't taken a position on the I presume you're talking about the portion of the governor's bill that would require that transportation funding be allocated on a per-student basis to charter school entities. The district hasn't taken a position on that specific element of the governor's bill at this time. As I think you've heard a little bit about, the district currently takes the entire district's transportation allocation, so the per-student allocation that we get from the state times the entire student population in the district, pools that funding, and then allocates it to a specific type of or certain types of service that affect us district-wide. The net impact of that is that the last time that we did an actual estimate, only about half of the students in Anchorage are eligible for the transportation that the district provides. That is because of a variety of limitations that we place on the transportation, but that has been the district's policy for many, many, many years, long before my tenure began with the district, and the same approach has been in place whether we were getting our money on a per-student basis, which has been the case for about the last 10 or so years, I believe, or whether it was done based on a reimbursement of actual district costs, which was another state funding system that had been in place even before that. So with that, Madam Chairman, I'd be glad to answer specific questions.
Representative Ledoux.
Mr. Abbott, it appears that Anchorage is one of only two school districts in the state that do not provide transportation to charter schools, the other one being the Lower Kuskokwim, which has only one charter school, and they have a dorm on the premises, so that it's not really even applicable there. So what went into the thinking of the Anchorage School District why they don't provide transportation to the charter school students? And if a bill in some form, I'm not sure what the ultimate language is going to be, mandated in one way or the other that that Anchorage do so, what would be the practical ramifications of that?
Madam Chairman, Representative Ledoux, I can't really speak to the causal factors that led the district to address charter school funding the way it did when the charter school program, as it's currently conceived of, was initiated 10 or 15 years ago. I can speak to what the potential impact would be. Right now in Anchorage, roughly 5% of our student body attends one of the 8 sanctioned charter schools. So if the, I believe if I understand the governor's language correctly, that would essentially divert 5% of the student transportation revenue stream away from the current district program. And that would require us to either reduce the service level that we currently provide for the district, or the overall district student population, or to subsidize the student transportation program with general funds. We already subsidize the student transportation program to the tune of about $1 million or 5% of the total transportation program cost. And I know that's not an unusual situation. Many districts in the state end up providing some general fund contribution to student transportation. Anchorage I think the percentage of our subsidy might be even lower than what a lot of other districts provide. So that would be the challenge for Anchorage, a 5% reduction in our overall student transportation revenue stream. We would either reduce service or we would maintain service and draw funds out of the general fund for that purpose.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
I'm just curious about something. Aside from the areas where students live in a place where they'd have to cross a dangerous highway or something like that, is it if they live more than a mile and a half, is that the cutoff point? At what point do kids get service, bus service?
Madam Chairman, Representative Ledoux, you're pretty close. If the walking route, a non-hazardous walking route, is less than a mile and a half, then the students are not eligible for transportation. If their walking route is either more than a mile and a half, or it involves the crossing, or it involves essentially crossing a road that is considered not appropriate for the age of children that are being that we're talking about, then they are eligible for transportation, and that only applies to their neighborhood school. So there is no transportation other than Rogers Park, which I think you discussed a little bit, as well as Child in Transition, Special Ed, and a little bit of leftover No Child Left Behind required transportation. Those are the primary exceptions to the mile and a half in-boundary transportation availability.
Just follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Two questions. How much money would it save if you changed it to 2 miles rather than a mile and a half?
The short answer is I don't know off the top of my head. It would probably change it significantly. It might very well mean that it would significantly reduce elementary school busing. Most elementary school children live less than 2 miles from their elementary school. So we already have a number of elementary schools for which we offer no transportation for regular home-to-school or school-to-home service, other than special ed or something like that. So there are a number of, I think there's 7 or 8 elementary schools, a little more than 10% of our elementary school system that is walkers only. If that was expanded to 2 miles, I would imagine there would be many other elementary schools that would fall into that category, and even then schools that had some bus service remaining, it would be significantly less. That's the sort of service level change that I presume the district would consider if the transportation funding available for basic school-to-home and home-to-school transportation was reduced.
Can I follow it just a little bit more? Would it be practical, and would it also save significant funds if, let's say, you bust kindergarten through third grade at one level and then fourth grade through sixth grade at another walking level? I mean, what distance level?
It could. In general, our challenge in transportation is not the number of kids, it's the distance we have to go. So if we're making a stop in a neighborhood, and as you can imagine, at elementary school bus stops, we have a lot of stops on a route because we don't expect elementary school kids to have to walk very far from their home to their bus stop and vice versa when they're going home. So if we're already stopping, there's not a lot of added cost to pick up as many kids as are there. There might be some routes where the density would, where that paradigm that you described would save us route time and therefore money. But I would think in most cases, and this is without a detailed review, there wouldn't be a significant savings associated with that service change.
Can I just ask one more question?
And because we're out of time and because we're going to continue this conversation, I do have a student that has been online, and before we close, I'd really like to make sure that the students' voices are heard. Cassidy, are you still with us from Homer?
Yeah, I'm here.
And thank you very much for waiting. I wanted to get to you so you could get back to school if need be. So, Cassidy, if you'll be real brief, our meeting technically should have ended about a minute ago, but I did want to hear from you. So if you'll give your testimony and who, let me back up. If you'll put your name and who you might be with or what school you're with on for the record, we'd love to hear from you.
For the record, my name is Cassidy Wild. I represent the students at FWI Fireweed Academy. Of the 9 fireweeders here in the LIO, we average 16 miles one way in 3 different directions for every school day. So doing the math, bus funds from the state wouldn't cover bus costs for fireweed students. We appreciate an increase in the bus day student allocation, but it is not enough. We believe the legislative should allocate an increase of $100 per student every year for the next 3 years, just like they did 3 years ago. Thanks for the opportunity to have this so we can learn how government works and get a chance to voice our views.
Thank you very much, Cassidy, and the rest of the folks from Fireweed Academy. We really appreciate you guys standing by. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to put a question on out so that as we come back to this, this is under Section 9 of the bill, and we've been talking about the transportation section, but that also includes special education. And so I would like the districts to come back to us and see whether special education dollars should be proportional to the number of special ed children in the charter schools, or should it just be flat by the number of students in the charter schools the way this is written currently. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
I understand the question. And for the record, the committee, if you've got suggestions for amendments, please go through our office, and we just basically want something handwritten or typed so that it's legible, so that we'll go to Ledge Legal and we'll kind of put them all together as we process this through. So just a reminder that this is a cumbersome, large bill, so we want to be sure that we take each part in as we go through it. As we've been able to determine that this wasn't just a simple fix, but at the same time, I think we've also acknowledged that our charter school students certainly are our public school students, and as we advance through this process, should there be some parity, some equity, if we have buses going by our charter schools with open seats, I think we pretty much could all agree that with no extra dollar spent, that's really what we should be doing with our public education transportation dollars. So with that, we'll close. The Education Committee will meet again on March 3rd, and we're scheduled to hear an overall presentation on what a charter school is, what our Alaska laws are, and try to be sure that we're all very clear the very difference between our charter schools and our neighborhood schools and what they are and what they are not. So with that, we are now adjourned.